You're listening to the Today's Conveyancer podcast, the leading source of information for residential property lawyers in England and Wales. Don't forget to subscribe and sign up to our free newsletter at todaysconveyancer.co.uk. You can also follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter.
Hello, welcome along to the latest Today's Conveyancer podcast. Today I'm chatting with Alex Holt. Alex is the Chief Revenue Officer at Cashroom. The discussion today is a little bit more about what you do and how you do it, and hopefully answering some questions that people might have about the service. But in the first instance, I always ask this one, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and then also tell us a bit about Cashroom as well, please?
Absolutely. I thought you were going to ask for an interesting fact or something horrendous at that point. So yeah, I'm Alex Holt. I'm Chief Revenue Officer, as you say, for Cashroom. I'm an ex-lawyer. I was a partner at a couple of big law firms. I was an ex-recruiter as well. I set up my own recruitment business, but please don't hate me. And then I ran a business development effort for a global IT outsourcer for a number of years before joining Cashroom about 10 years ago. We provide outsourced finance functions for law firms throughout the UK, for about 250 law firms. We're the biggest provider of that service, independent from any software. So we support any practice management system at all. And what we find is that any shape and size of law firm can use what we do. So we do cashiering, we do payroll, we do management accounts, we do credit control, we do big projects to put firms right who've got into a bit of a mess, which is not as rare as you might think. And then we kind of provide services that keep them functional and keep them operating compliantly. So yeah, it's basically a full service outsourced finance function for law firms.
And I know we've chatted a few times about the growth plane that you guys have been on, but you're obviously growing, and I know you attribute some of that growth to the departure of expertise on legal accounts and that function from law firms.
Absolutely. I mean, when I joined the Cashroom nearly 10 years ago, we were a relatively small business coming out of Scotland and opening in England and Wales. And it was kind of, it was in an era where the idea of outsourcing the accounts was pretty new, or certainly not the norm. I mean, even to this day, in-house is probably our main competitor, because we're pretty much the biggest non-software aligned cashiering and finance function. In other words, we work with any system. So of the type of thing we do, we at the time were dealing with lots and lots of smallish law firms starting to come out and look at, you know, the classic example is the retiring cashier. It's that demographic of people who, you know, as an ex-lawyer, it was very much a demographic where people would perhaps have done other things in the business, perhaps been a secretary or whatever, and gone through and become a cashier. And then as it's gone forward, you know, they're not really, ask any law firm around, there aren't loads and loads of good quality cashiers around. And I think that's been compounded by technology. You know, it's a challenge for all of us, for any of the firms, that new practice management systems, again, from my era, I was of the era where it was the first kind of round of practice management and document management systems as a lawyer. And then as the new ones have come in, and you know, you're dealing with law firms and cashiers who've dealt with the same practice management systems for, you know, pretty basic ones really for the last maybe 20 years. And suddenly these new systems come along, they're brought into the practice, makes the life of the lawyer 100 times easier, but in many cases is a real kind of problem for the cashiers who've done things in a certain way all that time, perhaps using spreadsheets and things like that. And the new technology can be a bit of a problem. So I think both elements mean that you've got people leaving that work and leaving that job. And as a result, that's definitely, you know, I would say, played into our hands. But I mean, I would say it's the other way around, really. We're a solution for that problem, I guess.
I think it's also fair to say that things on the regulatory side have tightened up as well. So we've now got the COLP and COFFA regime. I mean, how much has that impacted your business as well?
What we find, and it's the same with when we've been into other geographies, which we may talk about later, but wherever the regulation is tight, that suits us really well. as I say, we started as a Scottish company. The regulators within Scotland are the Scottish Law Society, and they have a really strict regime, really, really tight on client money handling, really kind of tight on all of the controls that you would want to see in a business where the client money is at risk, and far stricter in many respects than in England and Wales. So when we came into England and Wales, the guys, you know, very cleverly decided that they would want to use the same kind of strictures and the same kind of tightness around process and regulation as they used in Scotland on their Scottish clients. So the design and the approach has always been kind of over and above. So when the regulations tighten, suits us great, because of course part of that regulatory tightening puts more strain on the lawyer, puts more problem onto a lawyer. You know, the lawyers speaking as one don't necessarily know what they need to do to be compliant. They don't necessarily know how to do day-to-day cash. I mean, they absolutely don't know, but they also, you know, want to make sure they're compliant and aren't always sure how to do so. So with our clients, when we're dealing with the law firms, the Culp and Coffer kind of basically can rely upon our guys to give them the service that's compliant, but also give them the end of month reports and things like that. So the tighter the regulation, the better in many respects. It works for us because that's how we operate.
Presumably those challenges that the law firms face reflected in your business. You're trying to recruit good legal cashiers, you're trying to find people who understand the regulations, find people who've got some expertise around that. How do you get over that particular hurdle?
I think we've learned lessons over the last 10 years in that we you know, in the past we would recruit, and yes, we would train people through then once they joined, but that works, you know, when you've got 20 or 30 people. When you're up to, you know, our present requirement, we've got about 140 staff, of which probably 90 odd are cashiering staff. If we were trying to recruit those people from all over the country or from wherever, you know, particularly in regions, I mean, part of it has helped with the post-COVID, with the whole idea of people working remotely. We work remotely. People can work where they like. We've got two office premises, but people can work from home. It's meant we can recruit a little broader. But we also realize that, you know, we can't always recruit experienced cashiers. And weirdly, somebody who's been an experienced cashier within a law firm doesn't always fit with what we do within the cash room. We work in a very particular way. We, you know, we work in a way that is process driven, is technology enabled. Because we're system agnostic, it means that we want people who are able to deal with different systems. And again, if we were trying to recruit for a particular firm on a particular system, it just wouldn't work. We have to be able to have that breadth of expertise. And so we, long and the short of it is, we created our own academy. We decided, yes, we'll carry on, and we still do carry on recruiting good quality people if they crop up. But at the same time, we bring people in and train them. So we've got a fantastic trainer called Andy Lowe, who is a legal cashier who has worked for us for a number of years. Andy has developed, along with a load of other people within the business, the training regime, the induction processes. And so, yeah, we bring people in, possibly post-college or graduates, and then train them through. And of course, what that means is we can train them in the way that we work. I mean, to be honest, it's a funny career, the cashier thing. Within a law firm, it's quite a lonely existence, I think, because, you know, if you think about it, you've got somebody who's on not a massive wage in comparison with, you know, the lawyers who are operating within the law firm. And that person in a kind of mid-range, high streety law practice doing private client work, that person will be moving millions of pounds of client money every year. And that person will have nobody really who they can ask advice from, because the lawyers generally don't understand. So, you know, if they were to suddenly go, well, I'm not sure how to treat the VAT on this, or, you know, who do they ask? And if they get it right every single time, every day, nobody says a word. I mean, being a bit unkind, I'm sure they say well done and thanks and all that, but you know what I mean? They don't, it's just expected. Of course, if they get it wrong once, it could bring the firm down, or at the very least cause massive, massive problems reputationally and from perspective of insurance and things like that. So from our point of view, what we do is, you know, if you've got that one cashier in the office, from our perspective, if they come and join us, they've got then a career option, because, you know, people can ask each other questions, and we have got managers who can supervise and monitor and support, and they've got a career, because, you know, like Andy, who joined as a cashier, he's now heading up our training. You know, we've got people who are doing other things within the business. So, and there's people who've come in at a very junior level who are now team leaders and managers and things like that. So it's a very different world, I think. And it doesn't suit everybody. You know, some of the cashiers come in, the senior ones come in, and they don't really like it. And sometimes they go, but weirdly, you know, sometimes they come back again when they look out and they think, you know, as a longer term career option, this is probably better.
You've alluded to the fact that you've got processes and procedures, and you've also said that obviously the cashier has got to get it right every time. We are talking a couple of months after the impact of the CTS outage that affected a huge number of conveyancers and home movers. Same kind of principle really for you guys, isn't it? Presumably you have to be really, really tight on things like your cybersecurity and protections to ensure that you're protecting client money.
Absolutely. I mean, we've got Cyber Essentials Plus accreditation, which is kind of more than the SRA regulatory requirement. So in a funny way, it kind of means that I always find it strange actually talking to the lawyers about it when you're talking to a potential client, you know, because many of the lawyers, when you talk to them about that, slowly realize, well, actually that means that if they come to us, their finance function will have a better cybersecurity accreditation than they would have had to have themselves. I mean, in the end, tech is a key thing for us. We've got the key methodology for us and the key differentiator, I think, as far as risk is concerned. If you think about the ways of communicating with your cashier, if you're in a law firm, majority of the time it's around either they'll pick up the phone potentially, but mainly it'll be, most of them use email or maybe e-chits and things like that. We realized quite early on that we didn't want to use email to communicate with our clients. And so we brought in some very clever technical people who are now part of the business, and who, because we acquired the business, they built for us the cashing portal, which is basically a secure tool for communicating. You know, old lawyers like me will remember it was pink and blue slips to communicate with your accounts team. We sort of replicated the forms that, you know, all the different types of form, whether it's, you know, client to office transfer or payment to client or whatever it may be. A series of buttons. The client presses that, fills in the information, presses send, and away it goes to their team within Cashroom. And of course, removes the vulnerability of email, which is great. From our point of view, from an efficiency and you know, making sure you get things right perspective, it then becomes part of a task management workflow for us, where we can see who's been asked to do what at what time, where it's up to in a process, whether it's been done or not. And, you know, we've got all incredibly clever dashboarding. So that helps again from management of, you know, not missing tasks and things like that. And I think the final thing is that our guys, particularly on the tech side, have spent a lot of time looking at how they can improve processes and improve particularly things around payments. So integrations with major banks around the open banking, creation of a confirmation of payee functionality, which means that, you know, pretty uniquely, we're, you know, as you're putting the information in, you can check that it's going to a bank that is the same as the account number, if you see what I mean. It's going to a payee that's the same as the account number. Things like that are, you know, every time it's kind of removing some of the risk, or at least trying to, you know, optimize use of it. And I think, you know, system integration as well, that's helped, because again, data then is not being rekeyed. You know, we're able to take data from those systems directly into our payment processes. And it avoids sort of error, because you've got the cyber threat, absolutely. You've also got human error threat. And then the other one is internal fraud threat. And again, because of the processes we operate for cross-checking, that is a big risk remover as well, usually.
You talked about the strength of regulation in Scotland and how that ultimately has had a knock-on benefit to you in England and Wales. You've recently launched an American adventure. Tell us about that one. Tell us about what has precipitated the launch in the States and what the sort of learnings and differences are.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose market size was a big thing. If you look at it just from pure numbers, I mean, approximately 40 times the size of the UK market, well over 400,000 law firms. We did spend a long time sort of looking into it before jumping, because we realized that it would be a very expensive mistake to make if we went out there, and it was, you know, it wasn't right. So we already had our tech head, Paul O'Day, was always out there anyway. Paul lives in Nebraska, has done for about 14 years, and he already had a view on sort of the legal sector out there, and we did loads of research, and we realized that the key thing there is there's loads and loads of bar associations, state bar associations. And the way it operates really is that the overall American Bar Association accounting rules are like an overarching rule set for the handling of what they call trust money. That's the equivalent of the client account, really. Every state bar association then effectively chooses the extent to which they impose the regulations. So again, taking it back to the fact that highly compliant stuff is good for us, we wanted states where regulation was important, that where they took seriously and were diligent about the handling of client money, trust money. So fortunately for us, the Nebraska State Bar Association is one that had adopted the rules pretty much verbatim. And so that we decided would be our starting point, because again, you know, we wanted to be somewhere where it was handy that Paul was there, because we immediately had somebody, you know, from a credibility perspective. When you're talking to a law firm, it's like, well, are you genuinely here? Well, yeah, the head of the operation in the US is going to be someone who's lived here for 14 years, his wife and kids, you know, all that kind of stuff. But also then we were determined to find, you know, somebody really good on the technical side, and we found, we were really lucky, we got a lady called Liz Parks, who is fantastic, just really, really knowledgeable, and we can kind of, we decided we'd build around that. The main learning as well was that we decided we wanted to take it really slow and steady. We wanted to do it carefully. We wanted to get it right. In the end, it's massive, the states, for obviously, but so if we didn't get it right, you know, you could go to another state or somewhere further away and nobody would know that you hadn't got it right. But what we did want to do was get it right. We didn't want to waste money and time and opportunity. So we took it carefully. We engaged with the Bar Association. And, you know, I'm proud to say that they were so impressed with what we did for our first few clients that they actually ended up asking us to do their accounts. So we do the accounts for the Nebraska State Bar Association. Starting to see prospects approaching us from other states. So we've got our first client in New York now. We're about to sign a client in Oklahoma. And, you know, probably one of the things that surprised us was that there isn't anybody really of our scale doing what we do, purely legal bookkeeping in the States. And that's been kind of ratified by various people. You know, we thought we're going to stumble across somebody at some point, but no, there's nobody of our size in the, obviously as a whole, but you know, that's really interesting to us, because it means as we scale it, is a great opportunity. So on the final point on that as well is, we just brought in a new head of BD for the US, which is a guy called Joel Carney. And Joel is just a wonderful guy. He was a partner in a decent sized law firm in Nebraska. He sits on the council of as a member of the council board within the American Bar Association. He's very well connected across various states in and around Nebraska, and just generally he's I suppose bit like me, is one of those, like, you say, oh, do you know so and so, and he goes, yeah, I know them because blah blah blah. And it was almost a bit like the same concept as when I joined, was to use someone who's got that set of contacts and who can get warm conversations going. Because in the early days, we, you know, we ain't going to sign dozens of firms from cold calling or from adverts, and it's going to be a trust-based sale. It still remains that much of the time in the UK. You know, it's the first engagement is really important, their credibility. And for us in the US, even more so, we had to get someone who talks the right language, but also has credibility intrinsically to them. And that's what Joel has.
And this kind of question is always a loaded question, Al, but what's the direction of travel for cashiering? I mean, clearly you guys think it's outsourcing, but is that the sort of general trend that you're seeing?
I would say in-house is still our biggest competitor. You know, you look at the majority of law firms in the UK, the majority of law firms in the UK have in-house cashiering. The objective we set, and I set for myself as well, was we want to make the outsourcing of legal cashiering the norm. And there's a number of reasons why I think it should be. I mean, I am obviously absolutely biased. But if you think of it in these terms, a little bit going back to what I was saying before about it being on one person's shoulders. I mean, in that situation, they are genuinely a single point of failure, both of risk of, you know, internal fraud, but also risk of error. If they're off on holiday or off sick, if they have a spike of activity, if they, you know, that firm suddenly has three times the number of completions on a Friday, how does that person cope? How does the firm cope to make sure that their end client's experience is as positive and smooth as possible? Because the money isn't going to move as quickly. If they lose their cashier, how do they make sure that they've got someone who knows how to operate the system that they're on? So therefore, how do they know that they're going to get data that they can trust to make business decisions? So all of these things incrementally, to me, when you then start adding in things like cost efficiencies, which vary wildly, by the way, I mean, it's kind of a bit of a myth, you know, that oh, if you outsource, it's going to be cheaper. I mean, first of all, depends what you're outsourcing to. If the service that you're getting is pretty poor, you know, we do daily bank recs, we do detailed payment processing, all these things that we resource. If you're not doing those things, if you're doing a monthly bank rec and you're doing, you know, stockpiling postings and things like that, you can do it probably quite a bit cheaper, but that's not the point. You know, if you did a sort of straight comparison of a full-time cashier in London, maybe getting 40, 45, 50K. And if they've been there for a number of years, incrementally, maybe on quite a lot more than that. If they're up in, you know, Stockton-on-Tees, they may be the same person of quality, maybe on 25 grand. So when people say, well, what percentage are you going to be cheaper or dearer or whatever? It depends where they are. It depends what the firm's makeup is. Depends what their requirement is. But without a doubt, if you're wanting, if it's value for money and sort of security and peace of mind, then to me, the outsourced option is the one. Provided you go to the right provider, and there are some really good providers. There are some really good sort of really little ones who do regional stuff. We're at scale now, slightly different proposition. We've been able to build in kind of management accounts teams and things like that who provide that next level of supervision and kind of, I suppose, expertise on things like, you know, advisory stuff. But yeah, I if I was running a law firm, not a chance I would employ someone, because A, I wouldn't know how to interview a cashier and know if they're any good or not. And B, once they're in, I wouldn't know if what they were doing was right or wrong. So, I mean, cracky, in what situation would you hire somebody that key to your business in that sense?
I think I've just had the cash room sales pitch. But, you know, it's a valid point, isn't it? We were chatting before we started recording that the professional indemnity insurers are always on the lookout for ways to improve the risk profile of a law firm, or improve their risk, if you like, in the firm. Again, presumably this is another way that firms can sell that or tell that story to their broker.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, when I started looking at how we would appeal to the market, given that lawyers are they're trained to be risk averse, that's what they do. To me, it became a really important thing as an ex-insurance lawyer as well to say, well, actually, one of the entities that they would absolutely respect and want to please and, you know, take note of their opinions is the PII market. And so we sort of leaned into that idea that the things that keep them awake at night are, you know, around risk and around insurance of their practices. So we sort of, you know, got in touch and engaged very deeply with the PII market. And we've got some really good allies there from, you know, the broker world, from insurers themselves, likes of Lockton and Howden and Travelers and JM Glendinning and the like, all of whom kind of we wanted to convince we were a solution that if their client firms were using us, then the firm was less risky, and I'm delighted that they allow us to say that that's the case, that they'll get a better risk review than if they didn't have our service, but even than in-house or any other external provider. But the point with that was it was all to do with trying to get you know, just an entity. There's no equivalent to the Law Society of Scotland down here that does auditing on a regular basis. The SRA audits and they get audited accounts, but it doesn't go in every year or two and review. Whereas the feeling for most law firms is that every year they're going to be asked by their insurer or their broker to justify their state of position, their state of play, how they operate, what are you doing about, you know, your risk avoidance, what are you doing about your client money handling. And so, you know, from our point of view, that was an obvious thing to do. Let's go with that, and let's go, those, they're scared of what that might be, so therefore let's go and say to them, well, we can help with that, and kind of let's make you a little bit less scared when that comes around.
It's interesting to hear you say that you feel as though your biggest competitor is the in-house cashier. You see that across quite a number of legal services. I think if you take digital identification, for example, a lot of those providers will tell you that their biggest competitor is paper.
Yeah.
Or is that's the way that we've always done it, this inertia to
yeah.
move.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess if as a result of this podcast that people have looked into this or look into the opportunities and options that are out there in terms of outsourcing and outsourcing in general, there's this huge trend towards outsourcing as well, isn't there?
Yeah.
Then perhaps we've done our job. But it's been great to have you on the podcast, Alex. Thank you very much indeed for joining.
It's been wonderful. Thank you so much, David. As you know, I'm always happy to talk about myself. So yeah, delighted with the chance to do that. Thank you.
The Today's Conveyancer podcast is available on your preferred podcast provider. It's also available on todaysconveyancer.co.uk. My thanks to Al. Thank you as ever for listening, and we'll see you again soon.
You're listening to the Today's Conveyancer podcast, the leading source of information for residential property lawyers in England and Wales. Don't forget to subscribe and sign up to our free newsletter at todaysconveyancer.co.uk. You can also follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter.